Hi everyone, welcome to an Echo, Chelsea Echo Deadline Day special, final score with the score. I am the score, and it's the last hour of the transfer window, and we're going to be talking transfers, we're going to be talking Chelsea, we're going to be talking your best, worst and weirdest transfers of the window. We're going to be talking about sporting directors at Chelsea, transfer policy at Chelsea, and everything else that really comes up relating to transfers and relating to Chelsea in this next hour. We've got some great guests here. I've got Rambles as usual. Welcome, Rambles. Good to have you here. If you unmute yourself. Anyway, Rambles is here.
Hi guys, hope everyone's doing well.
There you are. You're right.
Not bad, thanks. How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah, a bit tired. Had a busy day, but here we are. Good to have you here. We're going to talk about transfers in the next hour. Louis's here as well. Welcome, Louis. Good to have you here, mate.
Hola.
Not bad, thanks. You all right, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. I'd say it's been a busy day, but it hasn't. I kind of booked a day off hoping, you know, there'd be something I could do work-wise, reporting the transfers, doing the bit which we were talking about, and turns out that's not happened. And, it's all fun and games, isn't it? So I'm sure we'll be talking about the lack of transfer activity for Chelsea.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to talk about that. There is transfer activity going on elsewhere. We will talk about that as well. There's some interesting deals happening, actually. Lots of loan deals and one very interesting deal involving FC Seoul in South Korea, which we'll get to.
It's very surprising.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to that. And of course, we're going to have other guests up as well. Daniel Charles is here. He's going to come up a bit later. He's always worth listening to. His views are always great. So here we are. So Chelsea, in terms of the transfer window, we have loaned out, we loaned out Ian Maddison earlier in the window. Today, we have loaned out Andre Santos to Strasbourg. That's been officially confirmed by the club. And we're about to loan out Armando Broja. That's not officially been confirmed yet, but Fabrizio's basically said it's done, so it probably is done. And it's an interesting loan deal because basically the more he plays, the less they pay, which is actually quite smart because it means that they'll have to pay him to save money. And if he plays a lot of games, that means his value might go up in the summer. So you could argue that that's not a bad deal, but we haven't signed a striker. We've got Nicholas Jackson and Christopher Nkunku, David Washington, and Cole Palmer, the false nine, for the rest of the season. So that'll be fun. That's going to be interesting to see what happens if we get a few injuries. So that's what's happened at Chelsea in this window. We didn't actually sign anyone. I'm not completely unhappy with that because I didn't want us to go rushing around like last January, signing everyone in sight and making rash big signings and, you know, kind of panic buying or, you know, making signings that we probably regret. I'd rather sign no one than do that, honestly. But I think we did need a striker this window. Even if it was just a loan deal for somebody who can, you know, who's got experience and can score goals. But alas, that was not to be. There we go. Fabrizio has confirmed that Armando Broja has signed his contract as a Fulham player. That's done and sealed. So I suppose that'll be announced any minute now. They've got another hour to.
Well, here we go.
Yes, here we go. Fabrizio. Yeah, it must be his easiest January for a long time, honestly. Because I honestly, this is a bigger issue with the transfer window that none of the big clubs have actually done many deals. I mean, Aston Villa signed someone yesterday from Middlesbrough, and I think they're signing somebody today as well. I can't keep up. But generally, none of the big clubs have done any business. Man City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Tottenham. Tottenham are the only exception.
They terminated.
Bertrand Traore, yes, ex-Chelsea player. Ex-Chelsea player. He's gone to Villarreal on a free, yeah.
Still in the UK today that I'm just seeing from Fabrizio's Sensi signing from Inter to go to Leicester, which is a great move for him, to be fair. He was great at Swarov, so you know, yeah. It'd be interesting to see how he does for Leicester. And obviously that is Chisholm, like I said, he's replacement. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that relationship develops.
Yes.
And if he'll play, but I'm sure we'll get onto that later.
We will. I think we need to talk about the players that have come back. We've got, in particular Cassidy, because Cassidy is going to be with the first team squad. He even came on yesterday at Liverpool. So he's clearly going to use him. He's already got minutes for Chelsea. Oh, that's good. I hope he gets more minutes. That'd be really good. Because I do rate him. And he's had a decent season for Leicester. You know, he's done pretty well. There was no football reason to recall him, really. But we did. There we go. So there's a lot to talk about. I think the first thing I want to talk about is, well, what do you make of Chelsea's business overall? Both outgoings and, well, lack of incomings. So, Rambles, what are your thoughts on that?
See, I'm a little bit torn. I'm disappointed that we didn't bring in an experienced striker, but at the same time, I did feel we kind of needed a more quieter window. Because the last few windows, there's been so many players coming in. You know, they've needed time to settle, needed time to adjust to the league. Whereas this window's, from an incoming point of view, has been nice and calm. And maybe the directors have learnt something from previous windows. Or we can only hope.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I think there's a... Oh, I was actually hoping we wouldn't do much business this window. I remember Matt Law actually said on London is Blue that he didn't think Chelsea should do any business and that they should stick with what they have and back it and, you know, have a bit of stability. It is nice to have a bit of stability and not too much change, I'll be honest. We've had every transfer window has been loads of change. We had 11? How many players came in last January? I can't even remember. Was it 6 or 7? And then we had
Badia Steel, Rudrick, Medweke,
Thatcher Fofana.
Thatcher Fofana, Enzo.
We had loads. Mudrick, Enzo, yeah. It must have been 6 or 7 players in January. And then we had loads in the summer as well. I'm not even going to bother counting because there was too many. This is the first transfer window we haven't bought anyone under the new ownership. It's probably a good thing in the long run. In the short term, it's probably not a good thing because it'd be nice to have another striker. But, you know, in the long run, maybe it is a good thing. And maybe they're looking in the long run. I'm trying to be kind to them. I'm not at all happy, really, with our footballing structure, and we'll definitely get to that. What about you, Louis? What do you think of our business?
I mean, it's not terrible. I understand the logic as to why we haven't signed anybody, but I also think it's an incredible logic. So it's 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. You know, I'm happy to have reined it in a little bit, but I'm also slightly peeved about the processes and the fact that, to be honest, they haven't strengthened at the same time. But then again, maybe even next summer, who knows, where we're going to suffer from a massive spending spree over the 3 previous windows where we spent nearly £1 billion and we've made too many mistakes where we need to have outgoings to make the difference. And obviously Ian Matson, De Bruyne, you know, these were 2 players which I think people maybe expected to be sold this window in a bid to maybe strengthen the squad straight away. But, you know, it's something which hasn't happened. It hasn't materialised because, I mean, £50 million for Armando Broia was insanity, but it's equally as insane to loan him out without having a direct replacement. And obviously I know people are going to sit here and say, well, he wasn't exactly scoring goals, wasn't exactly making a difference. I understand that, but actually just having that body in the squad where actually have on the pitch, which means, guess what, if he's playing centre forward, Cole Palmer can operate in positions where he's far stronger and actually have more of an impact on the game, then you'd want that rather than having to shoehorn some information without the ability to actually allow to flourish. So, you know, I do think that it's the definition of insanity to let go of Armando Broia without replacing him, but ho hum, what do I know, mate?
Yeah, I know, mate. Just a little update on the football tonight. Drama Wolves have equalised. It is 3-3. All the teams around us are dropping points as well. Like West Ham drew, Brighton lost, Wolves have drawn, and Man United have drawn. So last night, it probably hasn't done as much damage as it could have done. So, although the game's not quite over yet, but we'll see what happens with that. But Max Kilman scored for Wolves, who I've been saying we should sign for Chelsea, and so has Louis. So, yeah, that's a little Chelsea. That is Chelsea related, because those two teams are very, very close to us in the league. So, yeah, interesting stuff. So, okay. I mean, getting back onto that topic, I think I'm happy that we haven't panicked and gone and spent loads of money. We haven't just made a signing for the sake of it. I'm happy that, we didn't just go out and spend money just to win some PR points, I'm actually quite happy that Pochettino has been giving opportunities to academy guys this month. Adam Gilchrist, we know Alfie Gilchrist has been brilliant. He's been fantastic and needs to be around the squad. And there's others as well. I mean, I think five or six academy guys have had debuts this season under Pochettino. It's gone under the radar a bit, but I think that's a good thing. Washington's now probably going to get chances with the first team. So we don't know how good he is. I mean, honestly, we don't. And there's some people in the fan base who are big fans of his. So especially people from, I've got friends who know Brazilian football and are big fans of his. So it'll be nice to be interesting to see what he does. I mean, the bottom line, Armando Broglio had two goals in about 18 games, I think it is this season. I think that's it. I can't remember. Not all those to start. But he wasn't being prolific, we wouldn't be letting him go. Oh, you've got to be joking me. Sorry. Man United have got another goal. It's 4-3. If he was being prolific, I don't think we'd have let him go. I think they're happier to let him go because he's not been prolific this season. And obviously, yes, you're right, Louis, as well, that this, you know, we spent a lot of money. And because we haven't got Champions League football in the process, that money has to come from somewhere. So we've had to make it up by selling academy players. That's the simple reason, honestly. I think it's not a matter of like we don't like academy players or we don't want them to do well. It's simply a matter of finances. At least Conor Gallagher has stayed. That's a positive as well. I think we've got him to the end of the season. That's a big positive. So
I have an issue with that though, mate, in terms of the constant set of academy players. It's not because I'm, a Cobhamista or like someone which, on Twitter it'd be very simply going, you're clearly this. No, I'm looking at this and going, well, the players that we're bringing in to replace that quality, because realistically, personally, I believe that Chelsea have the best academy on the planet, and I think it's not just players that play for Chelsea that have proven that, it's the impact that we've had in modern football teams. If you even look at that Man City team, okay, Chelsea graduate, he's been a massive part of that treble winning side, whether it was bit part or, being that player which can slot in. He's a player which has been very important to them. I do think has been quality which we're selling or looking at selling, which we're replacing with people that are worse and don't have the same ability and the same output. I don't understand that side of the business. And it all just stems from a lack of understanding to move players on or overspending on players when we shouldn't have been doing it in the first place. And, it's going to cost us in the long run, I feel.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was Ian Matson...
Yeah, go on, Ram.
If I was Ian Matson, I'd probably be a little bit annoyed that I didn't get more opportunities. No, Poch has given opportunities to some academy players, but players like Ian Matson, he probably could have done a job for us, but for whatever reason, Poch just didn't fancy him. He might feel a little bit aggrieved how other players got opportunities even when they maybe didn't deserve them.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, it started in pre-season actually with Ian Maddison because Pochettino has not seen him as a left back at all in a back four. To be honest, I actually think his best position is left wing back, not as a left fullback. And it's the same with Chilwell, actually. Chilwell is much better as a left wing back, although he can play left back. That's a whole other conversation about what system we should be playing. But so, you know, yeah, he played him in midfield and he played him on the wing and stuff. He didn't play him. He'd never played him at left back in any of the games he played him in. And, you know, that was probably a sign that, you know, he probably wasn't going to get many opportunities because you've got other players in midfield and other players in attack who are going to play ahead of him. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of felt that was almost inevitable that was going to happen. And he's a good player. I mean, he is a good player. I mean, obviously the German league is the German league, so players get a little bit more room to express themselves there, but he's still a good player.
Even with that, though, score, you know, people were saying he wasn't built for the Premier League, he lacks the physicality. He's probably in the most physical league in the top division or the top countries in the world in the Championship last year. I've watched him a few times playing for Burnley. I actually had the privilege of going to watch him when they played against QPR, went with Liam Vizza, as some people know him. And, you know, physicality wasn't an issue for him. I mean, I appreciate Pochettino's got a system that he wants to play, right? But right now, with the way the team is, you would think that maybe, you know, you'd want to do damage limitation, damage control, play with what you have, you know? And realistically, Chelsea, and as we have done since Conte, have an abundance of defenders, whether they're good or not. So I don't understand why we haven't adapted and maybe gone with a three at the back or, you know, tried to cover up vulnerabilities. But, you know, again, what do I know? You know, I just watch football every week.
I mean, I agree with you. I thought for a while our best system would be a back three. You know, I actually saw somebody tonight post a back three out in lineup with our current squad, and it looked good. I think you had Levi, Silva, and De Zarzi at the back, and you had, you know, this was with a fully fit squad. So I had Fofana at right centre back. I had Reece James and Chilwell on as wing backs, and then Enzo and Caicedo in the middle, and then Kunku and Palmer behind Jackson. You know, and I think that's a pretty good team actually, if it was set up properly tactically. But yeah, we're not doing that. So Pochettino doesn't do that generally. We haven't seen him do three at the back for us. He has done it before, but he's not done it at Chelsea. So yeah, that's a good point, Lou. I think, like, you know, I mean, to be honest, in terms of the back three, a lot of progressive managers now, emerging managers in Europe, are playing back three. You know, Alonso's playing it. Tuchel's not emerging, but he's a top manager. He played it. Pep played it last year. Amorim plays it. You know, Nagelsmann plays it. There's, you know, they all use back three systems. So it's like it's quite in vogue at the moment, I guess, is what you want to say. So I wouldn't be against us playing a back three at all, and I think it would actually suit a lot of our players. So, yeah, absolutely. So, okay. So let's get into... I think we should get into talking about what Chelsea do need to do to improve our squad, because, you know, we've got... There's clearly areas that we need to improve our squad, and that obviously that will come in the summer now, not in the January window. I think some of the areas are obvious, like up front, getting a goal scorer, and maybe a replacement for Cucurella, left back, and, you know, and maybe an attacking creative goal scoring winger as well. I think those are areas we need to improve. Rambles, what are your thoughts on positions that we need to be thinking about for the summer?
I think we definitely need a centre-back, a left-back, another attacking player and a striker. But equally as important, I think we need characters, we need leaders.
Yes.
We need someone who's just going to... We're just lacking big personalities on the pitch.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. I mean, that's one appeal of Osimhen, to be honest, is he's quite a big character and he's a strong character. He's got leadership qualities and he's not a kid, you know, he's like 25, you know, 26. He's got a lot of experience now. I'm not saying that I definitely want him, but I'm saying that's some advantages that with him. He's not like 19, 20, still making his way in the game. You know, he's done it. He's won Serie A, you know, he's played in big tournaments. You know, so he's got experience. So that is an advantage of him. And I know that the club probably want him. Whether we get him or not is a whole different story. It depends who's negotiating it, probably. And we'll get to that. What about you, Louis? What areas of the pitch do you think we need to strengthen?
Realistically, I mean, we're going to be looking at a centre-back with Thiago Silva on the way out. And I do feel that Benoit Badiashile just isn't the quality and the level that's required. So I'm not really sure about that and him. I think, you know, if you look at Levi Colwill, I'd like to see someone who could come in who's ready-made, first-team quality, maybe 5-6 years in the tank. You're looking at someone 26, 27, 28. I think, as we've already said, the left-back is someone we need to consider. And, yeah, the obvious is definitely centre-forward. But I'd like to go in with logic. I appreciate Victor Osimhen's quality. He does look built to maybe come in and make a difference. But right now, that squad is full of too many players that are full of risks. And signing a player from the Serie A is a risk, irrespective of how good they are.
That's a good point.
So I'd very much like to look at the market. And if I'm being brutally honest, I'm looking at Premier League proven. And that's the biggest thing for us, I think, to build a stable foundation. We need to look for players that have that quality and they've proven that quality within the Premier League and they can come in and make an impact straight away. There is no bedding in period aside from maybe pre-season where they're going to be getting to know their teammates. So I'm kind of looking at Ivan Toney, Max Kilman, have already said, Mark Gahey. Those sort of players I'm looking at. Left-back option. I mean, I guess you could take a risk there. I'm not really too sure who I'd bring in. I haven't really thought that far ahead from that one. But I do feel it's someone who is willing to deputise. And to be honest, ideally, I mean, the profile I'd look for, and I have to think who that player is, I couldn't tell you right now, but I'd love like a, almost like an Aspilicueta-esque figure, you know, left back, can plug in a centre back if needs to, can play at right back, just that utility player. We do need somebody who can do that. So we'll have to see, but I mean, that's what I'd be looking at for the summer, but you know, let's see what happens. Who knows? We could make a last ditch bid this window for like, I don't know, some 12-year-old from Paraguay. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. I do like that point. I mean, I think Premier League proven is definitely a positive thing. I mean, I love Ivan Toney. I've wanted Ivan Toney for ages. I've said we should sign him in the summer. I said we should sign him this window, actually. I found it very difficult to have a preference in terms of striker, but, you know, Ivan Toney is Premier League proven, and he's got the right mentality and character for Chelsea as well. The right kind of personality. And Max Kilman, absolutely. And Max Kilman, not only is he Wolves captain, not only is he Premier League proven and can play both sides of centre back. He's also a Chelsea fan, so and I know that these things don't always matter or whatever, but those little things make a difference for me, you know. And so tonight he helped get his side out of trouble almost. I mean, they very nearly avoided defeat, and he scored an important goal. So, you know, that's leadership, isn't it? And that's what we miss. Anthony Robinson is a guy that I like at left back instead of deputising.
I was just about to mention him.
Yeah, he's got a lot of pace. He's very tall as well. Obviously, he lives in London already, so there wouldn't be any issue with that. It wouldn't be overly expensive. You know, you'd probably be looking at 30, 40 million, probably, something like that. If you think about it, you could probably get Ivan Toney, Max Kilman, and Anthony Robinson for what? I don't know, 150, 160 million. Like, you know, that's three players that are already proven, don't need adapting, experience. They're all 25 or over. I think the youngest of them is 26, actually. I think Anthony Robinson's 26. And would be able to do a job straight away and don't really have a history of injury either. So,
until they come to Chelsea.
There's your job for the summer. Right? And get Michael Olise while you're at it. Like,
yeah. Oh yes, that is something I'm very, very much behind.
Yeah.
Michael Olise, he fits their model of signing toddlers as well. But he's a proven toddler. He's a toddler.
Yeah, I'm on a Michael Olise.
He's a toddler who's potty trained.
He fits the injury FC tag as well. Like, yeah, because he's always injured. He wouldn't get injured so much if Roy Hodgson didn't play him 90 minutes in his first game back from injury. He keeps doing that. The Palace fans are not happy about it. But he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. And we should be trying to get him. He's just, yeah, fantastic. Creative, scores goals, can make something out of nothing. Proven in the Premier League. You know, his brother's already at the club. I know that Joe Shields is a big fan of his. And apparently, I heard on a podcast. I don't know where I heard this. It was on a podcast, I think. I think it was on Simon Phillips' podcast last week that Joe Shields knows him and he's really pushing hard to sign him. And Joe Shields, you know, he knows his talent. So, yeah, we need to try and get that one done too. But, yeah, so that's the summer. What we're going to do, I'm going to get Daniel Charles up now, son of Chelsea. Broadcaster, presenter, writer, creator, according to his Twitter handle. He does great content. He's on, he writes some great stuff. He does some great podcasts, has a YouTube channel, everything. And he's quite active on Twitter. So I've just sent a request to him. I don't know if he's going to come up or not, but it'd be good to have him up.
Rambles, do you get offended that we don't get intros like that? I'm extremely shocked every single time. No, you know, he never says anything nice about us, does he? It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I'll get a very basic intro.
You think I take you for granted, do you?
Oh. Yeah, Rambles is here, yeah. Say something.
Right, Daniel, you're here. Just your thoughts on some of the things we've been talking about already.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. Yeah, it's I think on the case of Chelsea's transfer business this month, I think I'm like with you in the sense that I'm quite content that nothing stupid happened, like radically stupid by Chelsea standards. We didn't sell Conor Gallagher. We didn't go rushing out to sign short-term options. There are some questionable decisions. I think the Ian Mattson one is one that is right to be questioned. But I'm of the belief now that I think Chelsea really need to clarify what our strategy is going into the summer. I think, as you've just been relevantly, it's a really relevant talking point of what happens from here, is that I was saying it on my show earlier that I think there's got to be an appreciation of a balance in recruitment now, where Chelsea and the ownership understand that all good squads need to have a combination of young developing players, players in their prime, and players near the end. And I think, unfortunately, it's been very lopsided towards players at the start of their careers. So I think the next batch of signings have to be proven 25 to 28 type players who can come in and make a real difference. And I think characters, those intangible things, I mean, I think are really just so evident at the moment to, you know, one of the things I've consistently had conversations with people about this season, whenever Chelsea have lost quite heavily or we've looked like we lack character, I wonder who are those characters, and I hate to use this word because I think it means very little today, but standards, you know, who are the ones with maturity who are leading those players, who are giving them words of wisdom, who are on the pitch being players to drag them through difficult moments. And I think apart from profile and tactical things that we want to see from recruitment, it's about those characters. And unfortunately, you can find those type of characters, like Declan Rice has been a leader since he was probably like 16 years old, but those are very hard to find. I think those kind of mature players who are going to lead vocally, but then also by performance, is something that really needs to be prioritised in the summer.
Absolutely agree with that, Daniel. Very well said. Yeah, I think that's right. We've got to get some leaders, got to get some characters, got to get some people with experience at the highest level, experience in the Premier League, preferably. That will help us a lot. I've been talking a lot to people about the 2001, 2002 team, and we had a lot of youngsters in that team as well. We just signed Frank Lampard at age 22. He only got 7 goals and 2 assists in 53 games in his first season. He wasn't spectacular. He was just solid. John Terry was like 21, I think, at that point. William Gallas was about 21. I did a count, actually. We had about 11 players in the squad who were 24 or under, I think. Like, we had a lot of young players. But we balanced that out because we had, you know, Marcel Desailly, Graham Lasso, James Ward-Hasselbank, Gianfranco Zola, who were all experienced players. Emmanuel Petit as well. So you had a balance of youth and experience in that team, and that team finished sixth. That was the first step towards the team that, you know, we all know and love from, the early Abramovich years and that great Chelsea team. But that was the first step towards it. And I think, like, I can see what they're trying to do, but they're missing that bit about leadership, character, good experience, not just experience for its own sake, but good experience, because you can have bad experience as well. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with all of that. That's some really good summing up of the situation at Chelsea. Now, I think because it's a transfer window, I think it's important to discuss the structure at Chelsea. A lot of people have been critical of the structure, including me, of our sporting directors who were hired out of Brighton and Monaco, neither of whom had ever run a big club, and whose specialist skills seem to be other than running a football club. Paul Winstanley is an excellent scout. He's done a lot of good recruitment for Brighton. He's very good at spotting young talent, but he's never run a football club. And, we have Lawrence Stewart, who's very good at selling players. Did a great job last summer, I thought, selling loads of players. And obviously has worked in a multi-club model before and has experience in that. But again, had not run a big football club. And I think with that lack of experience is showing. I really do. And it just communicates a lack of authority, a lack of big club mentality, presence. There's something about having a well-respected football person who's known in the game, respected in the game, has done things in the game in that position, and will not get bullied by other clubs, will not end up overpaying for players, and will be able to negotiate big deals without needing the intervention of the owners. And we need that. I think we need that. And that's not to say that we should just dump the other two. I think we can put them into other roles that are more suited to their skill set. But I think there's something that needs to happen in the summer. They won't do it during the season, but I do think that every position Simon Phillips was on this show last week saying every position will be assessed in the summer, including the sporting directors. There's always an annual review. They always have to get feedback. If they've not done a good job, if Pochettino ends up losing his job, I suspect one of them will lose their job as well, at least. But that's just my view. But I think that is an issue because it does dictate the mentality. It dictates the culture. It's the face of the club to the outside world as well. And it's not looking good at the moment. And there's got to be accountability at some point. So, okay, we'll go to Rambles. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would like to see someone come in who's got Premier League experience. And one name which brings to mind is Michael Edwards. He's currently unemployed. I know he did reject the Liverpool job, so I'm not sure whether he would want to come, but I would certainly try and make him an offer. He couldn't refuse because he's got the experience we need, and he's built a team which won every competition there is to win.
Yeah, 100%. And to be fair to Chelsea, they did approach Michael Edwards when just after the takeover, I think in August 2022, and they made him an incredible offer, apparently, which he was really impressed with. But he'd committed to his family, to taking some time to spend with his family, which I can completely understand because that job at Liverpool would have been all-consuming and would have taken up all his time. So I understand that. Then now he decided not to work for individual clubs, which is sad. But, we can always hire his agent. We can always hire the company that he now works for or that he's co-founded and get them to do a structural overhaul of the club. Maybe then we can persuade him to join us. But that's a good shout.
Another name I'd put forward, and I know he's looking to get back into management, but I've always said I think Frank Lampard would make a great director of football.
Yeah, I've said this before. He knows the club for this. Yeah. I think if you get an experienced sporting director and then bring in Frank Lampard as, a kind of, technical director or something like that, that would be a perfect combination. Because if you have got an experienced sporting director and then Frank Lampard walking into a room to persuade you to join Chelsea, that's very, very persuasive. Frank Lampard is very well respected in the game internationally. He's highly regarded. He's got pulling power. He loves Chelsea. He knows what Chelsea is about. He knows the expectations. He's a good communicator. He can communicate well with fans, with anybody. Like he could be the face of the project. He could communicate the vision of the owners even to fans. That someone like him doing that would be very influential.
And again, he's won everything there is to win, so he knows about building a winning team. he knows what a team and a squad needs.
Yeah, and again, he's got this amazing talent ID. I mean, I've lost count of the number of players that he tried to sign at Everton, or tried to sign at Chelsea, like, who weren't big names at the time, but now are like £100 million players. You know, I think he signed Inanna as well for Everton, who everyone now.
Yeah, wants. Chelsea wanted Rice, Bellingham, and Haaland were three of the players he wanted.
Yeah, and you could have got them for a combined price of £100 million.
Yeah,
at that point. You know, it's just ridiculous. Like, you know, and he wanted Caicedo as well when he went to Brighton for £3 million. He wanted him as well. So, you know, you can, like, imagine. God, I mean, like, you know, I mean, this is it. He knows players. He knows talent. You can see it. I'm not saying he's not a world class coach by any means, but his ability to spot talent is incredible. It really is. So, yeah, I'd make him an offer he can't refuse. Just, I know he wants to get back into management, but, you know, do whatever it takes, in my view. I think that would make a... And also that would help with connection with the fans as well. Fans might be a bit more on board with it if Frank Lampard's the face of it and he's communicating with fans about the project and what they're trying to do. You could have Frank Lampard come out and explain why they've taken certain decisions, why they've done this and that, what they're trying to do. It would help a lot, you know. But, you know, what do I know? I don't work in football, so what do I know? But, yeah, good points, Rambles, as ever. Louis, what's your views on this?
I personally, am first and foremost, I'm a massive fan of using the phrase, give them off, they can't refuse. Big fan of that. So, you know, we'll stick with that. But I think for me, yeah, I think Frank Lampard would be a great fit. He seems to get on with the ownership very well, which is clearly a big thing. I think his credibility as a manager, rightfully or wrongfully, unfortunately, is extremely tarnished. I couldn't see him getting another job in the Premier League. I think he'd be looking at the Championship. And to be honest, as you've stated already, I think his skill set lies elsewhere. I really do. And he'd be great. Obviously, I know we spoke about this yesterday. Paolo Maldini was thrown in. Might not be Premier League proven, but again, a proven winner. But, you know, the big thing for me, you know, as I said, it's got to be Michael Edwards. It's got to be Michael Edwards, or it's got to be Paul Mitchell, or somebody who can literally go, here's a piece of paper, tell us what you want, and please, we'll give you whatever is needed to fix this mess.
That's exactly how
I feel.
Paul Mitchell is unemployed as well at the moment, by the way, and so is Maldini. They're both unemployed. So you could literally bring them in right now if you wanted to. Yeah, good points, Louis. Daniel, what are your thoughts on the structure at the club and how it needs to be improved?
Yeah, I mean, I think the issue we've got at the moment is it's very, a little bit like the squad, it's stacked too much with sporting directors. And I think my big concern at the moment is because there's no sole figurehead, maybe the sense of politics and ego potentially comes into it with certain sporting directors lobbying for pet projects or players who will give them credit if Chelsea sign them, rather than a figurehead who has been in this type of situation before, has dealt in an intense environment. Like, you know, Michael Edwards, if he was to come out, would be of his kind of break, would be amazing. But Paul Mitchell, I think, has similar experience, and I think talks about the game in a very intelligent and reasoned way, just to kind of really streamline that process a lot more than it currently is. I think my one concern at the moment is that it kind of feels like these sporting directors have been given a lot of leeway and power to effectively try a first of its kind experiment on one of the biggest clubs in England. And I think that the unfortunate thing at the moment is like their kind of experiment would be fine at a Forest Green or a Swedish club who have limited resources and need to find inventive ways to get to basically compete. But, you know, Chelsea are not that club. And that's not to say that we don't look for progressive ways to improve the club. But there is, you know, I kind of feel like we're watching a bunch of sporting directors FM safe. So I personally think that, yeah, that for me, it would be trying to find a sole figurehead who is a sporting director, who could deal with the pressure, who could you know, very much deal with this type of environment and clear out the maybe the confusion that's in there. But unfortunately, they've committed to this multi-club model, so you probably need more than one person. But I think if what I mainly care about is the first team squad. And I'd also want the sporting director who appreciates the academy, because my worry at the moment is it's really being lost in terms of an appreciation of the academy not just being used to make up for our issues in overspending, actually utilize the elite academy we have to make up for holes in the squad.
100%. And that's another interesting thing about Michael Edwards. When he was at Liverpool, he tried to sign Tammy Abraham, Callum Hudson-Odoi and Fikayo Tomori. So he's clearly a fan of Cobham. I think, again, like, if you look at how Liverpool have used their academy under Klopp, it's incredible. I mean, that's partly down to Klopp, to be fair, because he's always been very good at using academy players and integrating them. Good points. And I think there needs to be a better strategy for how you use the academy. You know, I mean, I know that not every academy player is going to make it. Some of them will get sold on for profit, and that's not a bad thing necessarily, but you've got to keep the best ones. You've got to get opportunities for young talent who look like they could make it. You've got to give them opportunities. Like Gilchrist is getting an opportunity this season. That is, you know, again, like, and we shouldn't be ignoring that. We should be taking notice of that and giving him a long-term contract, because he's clearly got the right mentality and character and a lot of talent. So, you know, that sort of thing should be being encouraged. And, you know, we shouldn't just be seeing them as assets to sell, although some of them will be assets that we sell. I mean, that's just the nature of it. Not every academy player will make it in the first team. That's why it's getting that balance right between, you know, keeping the best talents from the academy and selling other ones that maybe aren't so great, and using that to help fund transfer. So, yeah, good points, Daniel. And we've got Archie for questions. So I'm going to bring Archie up. And just Daniel as well, what are your thoughts on Frank Lampard? Director.
I do think his player IQ is very good. I think that, as you brought up, I feel like a lot of what he did in, I'm not talking about the interim spell last season, but his first time at Chelsea, I think he had a lot of the right ideas of moving Chelsea forward. I don't think he had the experience or the coaching now or ability to implement it, unfortunately, and to deal with difficult parts of the squad. So I think from a talent ID point of view, I have confidence in him. I still think that giving him that role solely is a bit extreme.
I'm with you. Yeah,
I think I it sounds a little bit too much. Well, he knows the club, so let's give him the role. I think that But then again, it comes down to, you know, if it would Frank be the type of character, given his history and coaching now and given the stature of him, to be kind of a second in command, or to be someone who'd be part of the team that then maybe would one day take over that role. I think that it sounds like to me he still is very adamant of being in a coaching role.
He is.
That may be something that gets explored later down the line. You know, I think if he moves somewhere else and it doesn't work out, and I think that then this probably becomes, you never say never, right? I think then maybe it becomes a future thing, but I can't see it happening anytime soon, even though I understand why people would flag it as an idea.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I wouldn't want him involved unless it was alongside someone experience like Paul Mitchell, you know. And there is I wouldn't want him to do it on his own without any experience of working as a sporting director, for sure. And you're right, the realistic prospect is he tries to get back into management again. But I don't think it's something you can rule out completely, certainly for the long term. You're right. So we've had Archie up here for a while. Archie, I'd love to hear your thoughts
on
Chelsea and the transfer window. And
transfer window, actually quite, to be honest, like, relatively happy with it. I'm glad we didn't make any, like, cataclysmic mistakes. I mean, I know the Broya one looks bizarre right now, but let's just see how it kind of plays out. It's kind of too early to tell if that is a huge mistake when it comes to injuries. You know, if we are caught short up front, then obviously it is a mistake. But right now, I think we probably do have enough. I don't think over the last 10 games or so that Broya really gave enough. I think he scored one goal or something in the last 10 games. And also during those games, I never felt as though he's going to supersede Jackson up front, or, you know, he's going to keep Nkunku on the bench or anything. So, yeah, listen, it's interesting. There's been a lot of talk today. Just going back to the sporting director role, I think different clubs use sporting directors for different situations, right? And I think, reverting back to Frank Lampard, I think, as you quite rightly said, he would bridge the gap between the fans and the board, where there is a huge gaping hole right now. I do think his talent ID is very good, but I also think Win Stanley and Lawrence Stewart's talent ID is very good. I think where they come horrifically short is kind of future planning. I mean, I say that, you know, we haven't kind of got to the future yet, but I do think as far as, you know, building a squad and understanding what it takes at the top level, I think they come short mainly due to lack of experience. But I think that Frank Lampard would be a very shrewd appointment. I think you're right, if he was with somebody else who was handling probably more of the day-to-day stuff with regards to, you know, squad planning and pathways for academy and a short, medium and long-term kind of KPIs and what our kind of real objective is as far as representing the club, walking into a boardroom, getting a player over the line by talking to them, I think Frank Lampard would be a great shout. And yeah, just going back to the window quickly, not a horror show by any means. I mean, the fact that we didn't buy anyone and make panic buys, I'm always quite pleased with. I can't remember the last time we didn't buy a player in a window. I tried to look back on it now. I think it might have been in 2017. So quite a long time ago that we didn't buy a player. And
I don't think we signed a player in 2020.
No, I'm not talking about the transfer ban era. Are you talking about that?
Oh, no, we weren't banned in 2022. Yeah, that January window where everyone said we needed to sign a left back, and we didn't, and we tried to bring back Emerson, and we brought back Kennedy instead.
Oh yeah, I remember.
Good times.
Only two years ago.
Yeah, so dust has settled on yesterday. I'm not feeling anything anymore, to be honest. Can I also just commend Daniel for being the only person to ever do any type of live show or anything really in English mornings? The amount of times where I'm kind of driving to work and want to listen to something or someone talk about Chelsea or have some kind of morning content, it seems like most of our spaces are run by Americans or people on a different time zone, so nothing really happens until kind of mid to late afternoon. So to actually have someone in England waking up and actually bothering to talk about Chelsea in the morning is always a very nice thing. I like to listen whilst having a coffee to Daniel sometimes. So thank you for doing that, mate.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Good sound effect. Like that.
What's your morning thing called? Like coffee and something, or what's it? What do you call it?
It's morning blues.
Morning blues. If you should listen to it. If anyone, often on the way to work, I like to have a listen to it. So if anyone's awake in the morning, it's not even that early, listen to Daniel in the morning. It's a nice little show on YouTube and Twitter.
Morning blues sounds like you've had a really bad night and you just woken up and, you know.
Well, to be honest, I think with Chelsea currently, it's very appropriate.
No, it is. That's why I was laughing. I thought, how appropriate. Like last night, and you wake up and you got the morning blues.
We definitely had that this morning.
I think everyone had the morning blues this morning. Yeah, no, that's great. Thanks, Archie. As ever, always appreciate you coming up and sharing your thoughts. I think, one thing I think, one transfer I do want to talk about a little bit. Jesse Lingard. This is not Chelsea related, but it's just an interesting one. and I was talking about it with Louis before the show. Jesse Lingard moving to FC Seoul on a free transfer. I think it's a free transfer. Like, that's probably the, I was going to say that's the weirdest or most unexpected transfer of the window. Like, Louis, what did you think of that when you heard that?
I mean, he's just ditched his agents, hasn't he? Because they weren't getting him anybody after he'd fumbled the bag with Nottingham Forest after only signing a one-year deal when West Ham were willing to pay him something regular and he would have been playing regular football. But that's just him just going, I don't know what the hell is going on. Let me just get something through the door. And that's precisely what's happened because nobody was going to take a punt on him after the stunt he pulled at Nottingham Forest. So, you know, I mean, his career is done now. I think that's it now. Shame, because I think if you look at that West Ham revival, he was a great player.
He was, yeah.
But, you know, he elected, you know, to not do that. And, you know, to be honest, he's one of the very few players who's just owned that and just said, you know what, I'm doing this for the money, is what it is. If it secures my family, fine. But you know what, respect him for that. And, you know, Sabi has a good time in Seoul. Sorry, I said Seoul. I can't speak tonight. It's been a long old day.
It's been a long day, hasn't it?
but yeah, it's yeah. Sabi has a good time in Seoul, and you know, who knows? He might be the new member of BTS, or you know, start another Korean pop group to rival it. Who knows? He's got to do something with his time over there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you're right about that. You know, he was he could have gone to West Ham, couldn't he? Yeah, could have gone there and stayed and had a good career there, but didn't. Yeah, it's just one of those random transfers that you just see and like, wow, I wasn't expecting that one. We had a random transfer in Formula One today as well, nobody was expecting. Lewis Hamilton joining Ferrari for 2025, which I'm very excited about. I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan. To have an English driver driving for Ferrari and a world class driver like that.
I think that screams a Chelsea Echo trip to Maranello. You know, that's five minutes from my family. My cousin worked in the factory, so I'm going to be nipping in there at any opportunity. So
I'll take me there.
I'd love to come as well.
Right, have some tortellini, then right, boys, have a siesta, and we'll go to the factory in the afternoon. I still remember when I was little, because you can drive down there and just listen to the test track. You could park right by it. I remember I was about eight, and you kind of come to the test track. You just heard someone testing something. You sit and watch as the cars go, you know, around the corners, and the car just pulls up. Sort of, it was just on a corner, and this helmet comes out of the car, and you see it's got red, but it's got seven stars on the top. I remember being able to basically smell Michael Schumacher. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Lewis Hamilton settles into life at Ferrari, because you know he's a he's following some big names there, and you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with that. And it's obviously the biggest transfer, and it's, to be honest, it's saved transfer deadline day, because this has been god awful.
It has been a pretty, there's not been any massive moves this window at all. You've had some moves to big clubs, like Spurs have signed, they signed a couple of players. They tried to sign, that winger who almost went to Brentford and then didn't go to Brentford either.
Antonio Nusa,
that's it. The one that we were looking at as well, but it looks like he's got a knee injury. So I'm almost surprised we didn't sign him. all joking aside, he's a talented player. But Spurs have had a decent window actually. So they're looking good at the moment, which is even more frustrating because we all know we don't like Spurs. So but we did beat him this season, so that's something, I suppose. What have we talked about today? We've talked about weirdest transfers, we've talked about sporting directors, we've talked about Chelsea transfers now and in the future. Maybe we could finish off, and this is not a conversation I really want to have because I'm very patient and very want managers given time, and I still do, but it is a conversation on Twitter at the moment. We've got 5 minutes towards the end, so let's just briefly kind of thoughts on Mauricio Pochettino and how he's doing and his future as well. And we'll start with Daniel.
I mean, I'm not someone of the belief that would be changing the head coach right now. I just don't really think there are obvious options in the market. And I think that the flaws that are present within the current squad and the current club, that some of which we've discussed tonight, can't be magically resolved overnight. I think that you may get a boost in some ways, but I think that more chaos in the current situation, I just don't think, unless Pochettino really does maybe do a Graham Potter, in the sense that let's say we don't win another game for the next 10, or we win one in 10, then maybe we're having a different conversation. But I think that for me, I want to see how the season goes. I want to be here in May and make a different assessment. And I think that I have some parameters for me that I'm kind of judging Pochettino on. I think style of football, positioning of players, a sense that the team are foundationally getting better and players are generally playing better. And as a team, we're looking more effective, you know, in both boxes. So I think that that's how I'm judging things at the moment. I understand that there are some big things that we can criticise Pochettino for, but I'm just not of the belief that sacking him is the way that things are going to be fixed overnight, unfortunately.
I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you on that. I agree with pretty much everything you said there, Daniel. I think to sack Pochettino misses the point almost of you know, the real problems at the club. But yeah, Rambles, what are your thoughts on Pochettino and how he's doing?
I think he deserves to get to the summer, but I was very concerned with the game last night and his in-game management, you know, and his lack of tactics, trying something else. I wasn't impressed with what I saw. I thought last night was a perfect opportunity. Things weren't going well. Maybe try a back three, maybe try something a little bit different.
Yeah, that's fair. I like Daniel said, I want him given time, at least to the summer, and then you assess then. But he has got flaws. He has made mistakes. Tactically, we knew when he arrived that he's not, you know, in this kind of Thomas Tuchel, Pep Guardiola, Nagelsmann type of tactical manager. He's more of a coach than a manager, I would say. Like, he's obviously he's got a good understanding of tactics, but he's not in the same league as me. Thomas Tuchel maybe would be tactically. But he's good at developing young players. He's good at building teams. He's good at man management. He's one of the best at man management. Everything we hear is that the players love him and they're behind him. And that's very rare. You know, we've had no... I mean, this is one area I give the sporting directors credit, actually, is in getting rid of all those players last summer, who most of them were toxic players. And we had this issue every single season where you had stories come out that players were unhappy with the manager, blah, 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 player power. That hasn't been an issue this season at all. Even though we've not been, like, brilliant, it's not been an issue at all. It's gone. I think that was one of the things they wanted to get rid of at the club. And they said that about a year ago. They wanted to get rid of that at the club. And I actually think they have, pretty much. And that's a very good thing for the club going forward. It's not been talked about much. But Pochettino's played a part in that, for sure. So, yeah, I'm with you, Rambles, there. I think there are questions, but you've got to give him to the summer now. Especially now we've got a cup final to play. You know, I think he deserves to manage us in that cup final. You know, yes, it's going to be a difficult game, that one, but you never know. You never know. Like, Chelsea can pull something out of the hat and then just completely unexpectedly, you know. Like, the last final I expected us to lose, we won. So, you know. good stuff, Rambles. Louis, just finally, your thoughts on just, you know, the management position.
I think that the issues at Chelsea, as Dan was saying, it's more than just a manager. There are a multitude of reasons why we're in the position we're in. And I said this last night post-game, didn't I, where I was kind of saying, you know, the issues at Chelsea are significant injuries, and has been the case pre-Boley and Eggbali and Clearlake, and sort of that back end of Roma in 2019 onwards. it has been a case of poor management in terms of the talent we've purchased and brought into the club, as we said anyway. And, you know, it is also down to, I think, Pochettino's lack of, what's the word I'm looking for? Lack of flexibility, you know, as Ramble has pointed out. You know, I do feel that, you know, the best managers find a solution to get the results. And I think a good example of that was Thomas Tuchel. I think Thomas Tuchel needed to sort of come and get results, Chelsea, get a tune out of the team. And basically he came and saw what we needed to do and what needed to be done and changed the back three, and lo and behold, we went on a run and won the Champions League. But, you know, the situation which Pochettino has, obviously, I know is slightly different. There maybe isn't, or there definitely isn't the same amount of players and same quality in that squad, but there is an opportunity to go and get results by adapting the shape, you know. And like I was saying at the top of the show, a back three is probably the better option right now to sort everything out. So, you know, I do think maybe he could adapt. I think, as Dan was saying, if he goes on a run of, you know, 10 games and we just don't pick up the results, and let's be honest, right, the run we have now, it's not pretty. You know, Wolves, Brentford aren't exactly going to be easy now with Ivan Toney back, and then we've still got City, the cup final, Spurs, with so many games coming our way now, which are not going to be easy. So, you know, it's going to be tough, but, you know, at the same time, he despite the lack of change in the positions in the league, there has been an improvement at Chelsea. I think it's not as simple as just saying we've gone from 10th to 10th. You know, we've scored more goals, we conceded less, we've reached the cup final at the same point. You know, it's a movement in the right direction. So we'll have to see. But again, you know, he needs to be more flexible. And also, I'm not a fan of how passive he is. I'm really not a fan of that. The culture that Chelsea's been built on over the past 30-odd years, and you can hear it all in the Blueprint, actually, which is obviously a sister podcast to the Chelsea Echo. Sorry, Score, I had to do the plug. You know, you look at Ken Bates and onwards, you know, when he brought in Glenn Hoddle, you know, Glenn Hoddle brought in Ruud Gullit then also brought in Vialli, Di Matteo. You know, there was so many players that came in that set the standards, and then that was only emphasised even further when you know, Roman came in. As you said earlier, Score, you know, there was that 2000-2001 season with the right balance. You know, there's been a culture that's been built at Chelsea for the past 30 years, and it needs to be respected. And to be honest, it also needs to be maintained. So after the first leg of Middlesbrough and the game last night against Liverpool, I appreciate you saying it's one game, we need to move on. I appreciate that's going to do that to protect the players. I appreciate that that was the first leg against Middlesbrough. But at the same time, the verbal assault is also needed. I do think that there was an element of, you know, just saying, oh, it's still the first leg. You shouldn't be losing to a team like Middlesbrough that are in the lower half of the Championship. Oh, it's just a game. There's just a game. And actually, Dan made a very, very good point in his review of that game last night, where he said, you know, Dan said about, you know, if you lose and it's a young team and everything is given and, you know, you don't feel it was the case that people weren't trying 100%, you know, you can accept that and they will be the better side. And Liverpool were the better side. But, you know, to lose in that manner and to be so disjointed and almost really be showing nothing to really try and take the game to them and a real lack of teeth. And then for him to come out and go, it's just a game. He's not going to endear himself to fans. And that was always going to be an issue for him coming in as the former Tottenham manager. He tried his best at the beginning, but clearly, you know, the voice has changed and that was going to happen with how the club's being run at the moment, I feel. But, you know, for me, I don't think we should change the manager. I think if there was an option out there that fit what everyone wanted to do, then maybe you talk about it. But the reality is there is no real clear solution right now. And if there's no clear solution to a problem, then it's that, but also that problem is showing signs going the right way, then, you know, you've got to stick with what you got. But that's how I feel anyway.
Yeah, good point. Good point, Louis. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, I've done a lot of research on the data. You know, our points per game starting from the Tottenham game, our points per game has gone up on the previous, on the first 10 games of the season. You know, we're on track currently to get somewhere between 57 to 60 points this season, the points per game we have at the moment and the win percentages that we have at the moment. So I don't know what position that will end up being, but we don't know that. But, you know, I mean, there's other clubs around us whose points per game is actually worse than ours at the moment in the last 11, 12 games. So there's still every chance we could get sixth or seventh. We might fluke the cup final. I think that's a fair, balanced view, Louis. I mean, the managerial market in Europe is going to be big this summer. Klopp's leaving, Xavi is leaving. There could be potentially be jobs at other big clubs as well. You know, Tuchel could leave Bayern. There could be other jobs available. So
Amorim is leaving Sporting, I believe.
Yeah, I think he said if they don't win anything, he'll leave. I think that's what he said. And they're top of the league, I think. They won 6-0 or something, or 8, was it 6-0 or 8-0? I can't remember. I'm a big fan of Ruben Amorim. I think he's a future Chelsea manager. I think he's a perfect fit for Chelsea, but you know, I'm not wanting to replace Pochettino, but he's one of my favourite managers right now, and I think he is a Chelsea manager he's got the mould of a Chelsea manager for me. Anyway, but yeah, you're right about that, Ramble. So, all right, well, the deadline is officially closed now. That's it. Done. Closed. We can't sign anyone. We can't sell anyone now until June. We've got what we have till the end of the season. That's it. So now we can properly reflect on the window. And if people want to come up and share anything, I would love to hear from you. So we've got one person requesting. I'm going to bring them up. Abby O'Dum, I'm going to bring you up. So there you go. Just wait for you to connect. And anyone else here? I know Gary Hayes is here. If you want to say anything, Gary, we'd love to have you up.
Yeah, Gary, get your ass up here.
I'll give you a proper introduction and everything. Like, just to make Louis jealous. Abby Adan, what have you got to say about the Chelsea transfer situation? You can unmute yourself.
Yeah. Okay, good evening, guys. Okay, well, I'm speaking from Nigeria right now.
Welcome.
In the middle of the night in Nigeria. And, I was expecting that once Broja leaves, that Chelsea would make a signing to replace him. And as it is now, the window is closed and the club is not really bringing in anyone. I want to believe they want to actually stick with Nkunku and Jackson for the remainder of the season. And I'm sorry I'm saying this. From the beginning, I've never been a fan of Pochettino from the beginning, actually. And for the fact that they have settled for him, well, because of our love, dear Chelsea, I needed to support him. But for me, I think I've foreseen what is happening right now on the aspect. It's not that I have it is a favorite for the managerial job at Chelsea, but I've foreseen this coming up because I knew it was never tactically flexible, unlike we have Thomas Tuchel like that. So for me, I don't know. I can't really fathom where we're ending the season. And I know one of our priority right now is the Champions League, or probably a position that takes us to a European competition. So as it is, well, I am still short of words. I really don't know what to say. I was expecting we're going to replace Broja, but right now that we're not replacing him and the window is closed. I hope Poch will find a way to get result between now and the end of the season and make sure we get a European position. That's my take for now. And looking at the market, I concur with the fact that you're saying Amorim Amorim is managing Sporting Lisbon presently. I also see him becoming is a future Chelsea manager. I concur to that too. That's what I have to say for now. So I'm enjoying, I'm listening to you guys, so I'm enjoying it. Thank you.
Thanks, Right, yeah, so that's great. That's great. Thanks for that. We really appreciate what you've got to say there. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that got concerned about Pochettino. I think it's fair that he's not. It's fair to say that he's made mistakes. I think it's fair to say that there's fair criticisms of him. But there's criticisms, and then there's like, oh, we should get rid of him. There are two different conversations for me. I don't think there's one manager in the world that gets things perfectly right all the time. I remember Pep Guardiola's first season at Manchester City. You had people calling him Fraudiola, you know, because they weren't challenging for they weren't title contenders. They had a really bad run during that season, and they dropped out of the top four for a lot of the season.
They only just raked top four, I think, in the final few weeks of the season.
Yeah, literally the last game. They had to win the last game to get Champions League football. Right, it was that close. They ended up finishing third, but they had to win their last game to do it. And it was his first trophy of the season as a manager. So, you know, I mean, a lot of the media were kind of almost like delighting in it and mocking him for it. And then the next season, he got 100 points and shut them all up. So,
and Klopp lost his first three finals with Liverpool.
Yeah, he did. He lost in his first season. He got to the League Cup final and the Europa final, I think, and lost both of them. And then he got to another final and lost that as well, didn't he? He lost that because I think at one point he'd lost six finals in a row or something over two clubs. You know, it took him a while. And I think this is something I want to say, actually, that getting to finals when you're a young team and you're still growing and maturing, getting to finals is an achievement because you get to play in a final and you get the taste of playing in a final. And whether you win or lose, you get the taste of playing in a final. And generally, you want to play in more finals when you've played in one. And if you have, and you know, and I hope if we do lose, I hope we don't lose, but if we do lose, that Pochettino makes the players watch Liverpool go and lift that trophy, because that is something that when players see that, it makes them want to win.
Yeah, I don't think he would, though.
Come back and do better. No managers do that, you know, especially with young teams. They make them watch the other team lift the trophy because, like, this is what you could have done, like, this is what we want to do next time, you know. So, like, it'll be a good, even if we don't win, it's a good thing for the team to get to that final. I hope we win it, obviously. I always want Chelsea to win. But I think it would be good for the squad anyway to have that experience of playing in a final, because they want to come back and play in more finals.
I don't think he would do that, though. I don't know what it is.
I don't think he would. That's the thing. I don't think he would.
But this is what I mean about the character of him. I do question that quite significantly. I look. I think for him, it's a case of because he's not won a trophy in England. I don't think he has any. But I also think, look, I do feel that the mentality of players has changed now. I think, look, 5-10 years ago, if you did that with a lot of players, they would respond well to that. I think too many young players now are wrapped in cotton wool, and I think, you know, with this squad being so young. I don't think he'd do that. I really don't. I think he'd try and protect them as much as he could, which I understand. But at the same time, look, these players have had enough protection now. They need some tough love. And it's just reaching those points. But I just don't know if he'd do that with them.
That's a fair point. That is a fair point. Football culture has changed. And I think that's a problem that Chelsea have had for a while, not just under this ownership, that, you know, the changing football culture. You know, it used to be most players, you know, were proper men. You know, you take responsibility. They weren't mollycoddled by the media, like from age 16 upwards. You know, they didn't have all the media training. I'm not saying media training is bad, but, you know, there was a lot more. I don't know. There's a difference now. Young players are given a lot at a young age, right? And that's not their fault. That's not their fault. That's just how football is. And I don't blame them for it at all. And I don't begrudge some of them it, because some of them have a lot of talent. And it's important that they're taken care of properly and that they get mental health support and that they get, you know, proper support around them. That's really, really important to have that as a young player. But there is something that's changing culture, not just in football culture. And I don't think Chelsea have quite caught up with it yet. I mean, we've struggled with it because it's very different from what football culture was like when Chelsea were dominating and winning lots of things under Mourinho and Carlo Ancelotti and that team, and, you know, obviously from the Ferguson era where again, it was a completely different culture. Ferguson's style of management probably wouldn't work now, you know, with modern players. Like, and that's just the reality. I mean, he's one of the best managers that's ever been. But
well, I would remember Fergie didn't let his youth players wear coloured boots.
Yep, he made them you had to wear a suit on match day, period, or you didn't play. Like a club suit, you know. I'm a bit old fashioned with stuff like that. Like, because, and the reason he enforced it was, this reminds you of your responsibilities. You're here to do a job. You're playing for Manchester United. This is serious. You know, this is not just a casual day out of the gym. You're playing for Manchester United.
And he always tried to encourage his players to get married as well. He wanted.
Yeah, he did. He did. To people that he approved of course.
Yeah.
Unlike David Beckham kind of broke that mold and he ended up getting rid of him, of course. So yeah, you're right. I mean, you can see he was part of what he did at Manchester United. He wasn't just making footballers, he was making men. He was like, a lot of the people who've played for Man United have gone on to have good careers outside the game because that's how they were brought up. They were brought, basically educated at, you know, at life. And that's, I mean, like Cobham, to be fair, Cobham has done a good job of, does a good job of educating young players and giving them a proper education, giving them proper training outside of football. I think Fikayo Tomori actually did a degree in some, I can't remember what it was that he did a degree in, but he did a degree. He was just finishing up when he left Chelsea.
Business studies, I believe it was. I'll double check for you now.
Like, and stuff like that. So Cobham gives a good grounding to young men. In Cobham for life and for football, you know, that's you see there are so many Cobham players now around, not just in the Premier League but outside, you know, in Serie A, in the Bundesliga, there's ex-Cobham players doing well, and because they've had that grounding in the game and in life as well, they're good professionals, most of them. So yeah, but yeah, there is something about that Chelsea have to adapt to, because we probably won't be able to go back to what it was under Mourinho with Terry and Lampard and Drogba and Ballack and Cech and Ashley Cole and about six international captains in the squad, which is amazing. But we've got to learn to adapt to football culture now. And you still need leaders. You still need strong characters. You still need people with the right mentality. You still need people to set an example. Absolutely, I believe that. But yeah, that's something that, and maybe that's why Chelsea ultimately, not right now, but maybe in the future, need a modern manager who is an elite manager, who is a winner, but also is very in tune with the modern game and can help bring that kind of culture to Chelsea. That's maybe something that we need. And again, I'm not saying that for now at all. I'm saying in the future. That's a good point. That's a good point you raised, Louis, about that. Right, who have I got to speak about this topic?
Gary Hayes in. I want to get
Gary Hayes in.
Come on, Gary, step up, my man.
But if he, I don't want to request him and then him not come up. That's all.
He'll come up.
I'll invite him.
It's purely because he's now being peer pressured by me and he has to do it. Dan, tell him he has to do it.
You have to do it.
Yeah. You got to do it. You got to do it, Karen.
Yeah, he's got to do it.
And you can't repeat what Louis says either. Like,
yeah, he's there saying, I steal his thunder all the time. I'm actually just smarter than Gary. I think that's what the situation is, to be honest.
He's not coming. I think he's not coming up yet. But this has been a good show, generally. Really grateful for everyone's contributions, Daniel, Louis, Rambles, anyone else who's come up and spoken. It's been really fantastic to talk about Chelsea, just have a civil, you know, respectful, intelligent conversation about Chelsea's transfers this window, about the structure of the club, about the issues at the club, about the management, about a lot of good issues and some fun stuff as well, like Jesse Lingard going to Seoul. It's been really good. Thanks everyone for contributing. Really appreciate it. It's been fantastic. Really enjoyed it. And we're definitely going to do more of these kind of shows in the summer window, so keep your eyes out for those in the summer. We'll let you know about those near the time. Obviously, we'll be back again on Sunday with a review of the Wolves game, Chelsea v Wolves at Stamford Bridge. 10 games unbeaten at home over 4 months. which is pretty impressive. Hopefully we can continue that on Sunday and get the win. Man United have just beaten Wolves 4-3, so they're coming off a loss, and I'm hoping that their defence is as bad on Sunday as it was today. But we all know that's probably not going to happen. So, yeah, join us for that live show. There'll be a preview show on the Echo, I think, as well. So, again, follow the Echo, subscribe to the podcast, get involved, interact with all of us, follow us. We'd love to hear from you. Keep an eye on Daniel's account for his work. It's really, really great. Does some really great content, has a lot of smart things to say about Chelsea. Really grateful that you were here today, Daniel, as well. And, thanks, everyone, for contributing. And, we'll see you soon, and up the Chels.
Brilliant. Take care, guys.
Take care, everyone.
See ya.